You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 23rd, 2017. And episode number 314, and this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, I guess I took a week off last week, didn't I? Yeah, I wasn't here. I've been pretty sick off and on, so I don't know what's going on with me. Good thing I'm not a horse, I guess. Fighting a little cold, and with the cold is the voice, and you're not much of use on the radio if you don't have a voice. So I had to take last week off. Kind of focus on getting a little bit better, but I feel a little bit better, and hopefully I can make it through the show without hacking up a lung and causing Cindy to have to do an hour and a half worth of editing and cutting and patching my voice work back together to make me sound like a normal human being. Anyway, this week's news includes a review of the EnigmaCons event that took place over the weekend at St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia. It was a good time. And we're going to talk about Chicago. Yes, Chicago. If you've been listening to the show or paying attention, you know that there's some strange stuff happening up in the Chicago, Illinois area. Well, it's continuing. And I'm pretty surprised about this. This is going, it's going and going. It's really turning into probably the largest story of the year, I would have to say. And we're going to talk about a new ghost hunting fad possibly to come. It's seen it already before, but we'll also talk about it's 2016 all over again. A big story that happened last year is back in the news again. And we're going to also have the book of the week. And if I have a little time, I'm going to stir the pot. I'm going to bring up a controversial. Yeah, I guess it's controversial to me, I guess, and I think it may annoy or irritate some people out there, but it needs to be said. It's something that we need to talk about. It's one of those, what's that called? Intervention. It's kind of an intervention kind of thing. So we'll see what happens along the way here tonight on the Paranormal News Insider. And tonight's episode is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. And for more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And, well, I'll tell you, being sick and being I don't know how many days I spent sleeping, I kind of got detached from what was going on. As far as the paranormal, but you always keep like one eye awake. Some really weird, interesting stories, but some not even worth mentioning, like the guy that was purportedly sexually, I don't know how you'd say it. Yeah, I guess he says he was raped by Bigfoot. Interesting story, but more than likely not true. Not anything that I would actually take seriously. It was something that I was going to mention, but it's one of those, just, it's a joke. I mean, it's, you can't even really take it seriously. Just one of those weird stories. Now, I do want to thank, obviously, last weekend I was at EnigmaCons, the 20th, actually the 19th, the 20th. And then we came home on Sunday. I kind of give you a rundown of this. And first, I want to thank Marcel Hanauer, the director of St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia, for putting this together. They do a lot of different events all the time, but allowing me to come down from Ohio, and it was great. I'd been down to two events in the area over the course of 2012 and 2013. I was down there for the VA ParaQuest events. It was a lot of fun, and it was good to get back into that area. I'd never been to this location, so it was really exciting to go somewhere new. And really, for me, it was an interesting thing because I have not been in any kind of purportedly haunted location in quite a while. It's been a few years, actually. So it was kind of a homecoming for me. And there for a while, I was pretty ecstatic that I had not been in a haunted location for quite a while and in a ghost hunt type of situation. But, you know, it's fun to get back to your roots and get back out there in the field and work with a bunch of like-minded people. And I also want to thank Angie Dameron, Alan May, and gosh, I might as well just stop there because I don't want to forget anybody. There were so many people that were instrumental in putting this event together. Just from the people that put the convention together to all of the volunteers, people that volunteer their time and effort to keep that place going, to keep it put together and trying to preserve the history as well as the building. And they work pretty hard to keep that building operational and open to the public. So big, big thanks to them for doing what they're doing. And hopefully we'll have another event next year. And it went off with pretty much very few issues, which is really hard to do when you're putting on an event for the first time. Again, they do a lot of events there, so it's not the first time that they've ever done an event there. But usually when you do something like this, something kind of happens. It went off pretty much without a hitch. The only, I think, major thing was the presenters weren't able to really show their PowerPoint presentations very well because of the lighting in the area. But we got it was fine. We got our stuff across, and the crowd moved up, and everybody was able to see anyway. So, I mean, that was just a minor roadblock, really, in my opinion. And it was also a way for me to, again, get away, get into a haunted location, but also to reconnect with a good friend of mine, Nick Smith, who is a former investigator of my team, my old group that I shut down in 2011. And he's now a co-director with our new venture called Ohio Anomalous Research. So he and I put together a team together, and looking forward to getting out to more locations with him. And I know he would be excited to hear that, to keep doing what we're doing and to continue to refine techniques and move forward as a anomalous research group, not just with ghosts, but also cryptozoology and with UFO research. Really excited to do all of that stuff. Now, this event was a little different. Normally, these things take place on the weekends. This one took place on Friday. So I had Nick had to work overnight, so I had to pick him up about 3:30 in the morning on Friday morning and drive down to Virginia. Now, it's from here, where I'm at in Northeast Ohio, it's about a six-hour drive. So we got in just after 10 o'clock in the morning to set up my table and get ready for the event. Now, the event took place in a conference room, and the speakers were right up front and, you know, to speak. But the vendors areas kind of outlined the outside of the conference room. So we're all in the same room, which is really nice because then you can be at your table if somebody comes up and wants to talk about something. But you're also there to hear the speakers, because that's one of the reasons why I go to these things, is to learn from other people, to hear what they have to say, to again, learn from what their experiences are and their knowledge. I'm not just there to speak and sell books, but I'm also there to absorb what they have to say. And you know, you might learn something. So that's what I'm there for with that. And the speakers there, we started about 11 o'clock, and the first speaker was a gentleman named Adam Bonnet. Now, Adam is wheelchair bound, and he's, he shared his story, his personal story of how he ended up in a wheelchair, and was a medical issue when he was younger, and you know, he just turned that into, you know, a way to survive, a way to live, and he just adapted and he overcame this issue and just moved forward. And he got into the ghost field and struggled with that a little bit, and but a very unique opportunity for him, and he's been essentially recognized by ghosts as being this almost strange entity himself, being what he calls himself a glider, because of a situation that happened. And entities or spirits or ghosts or whatever you want to call them, it feel like he was just kind of gliding because of his wheelchair, which, modern wheelchairs are much different than wheelchairs of yesteryear. And I think that took place at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, which he ended up being a guide there and worked there for several years. Very knowledgeable. He's been around quite a while as a paranormal researcher, paranormal investigator, very knowledgeable guy. And it was really interesting to hear his story and his unique perspective on the field from his vantage point. And truly respect him and what he's gone through and what he does and his approach to it. Next up was Susan Switek, and she was the UFO person of the group. This convention covered everything, and I was the cryptid person, but Susan talked about her role in the UFO Research Coalition, which is essentially a bridge between MUFON and a couple of the other UFO organizations out there, and kind of consolidating information and trying to move UFO research forward as essentially a coalition. And she talked a lot about MUFON cases in Virginia, in the state of Virginia, some of the popular UFO sightings over the years. And let's see, from then 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, we had a tour of St. Albans, which was nice. I really enjoy going through these types of locations during the day when you can see, to kind of give yourself a little bit of perspective and a little understanding of the location to be able to get to know it. And I heard a little bit about it. I'd ask a friend of mine, Scott Sukel, who I'll talk about here in a second, asked his opinion. And he's used to being in the Mansfield Reformatory, a very large prison. So I wanted his perspective on it. And he said it was a little disorienting, which was a little concerning for me. And it was a little weird, just the way that all the rooms and all the wings were put together. It was a little awkward, because you really couldn't get around the whole place from one point. You had to go back and start again, go into another path to go up or down or to another group of rooms. Just the way it was put together, it was built, the core, and then it was rooms were added on. It's a weird shaped room. It's almost like like a Y, and then there's a little wing off that is another shape. So it's a really irregular shaped building. And it was a little bit disorienting to move about during that tour. But it was, again, it was nice to look at the entire floor plan during the day and kind of get used to it and feel a little comfortable moving around in there. And the next speaker was Pat O'Keefe. And she is instrumental in a lot of stuff that happens in that area. In Virginia, and she actually is the author of a number of books, including the book of the week this week that we'll talk about later on. And she's a very good photographer. So she talked a lot about photography and its application in the paranormal, which is was really good. She did a very good job of explaining all the things that we should look out for or do or understand as far as photography in the paranormal. It's just some basic stuff. Which is always good. You know, I enjoy taking photographs and I understand photography, but she kind of laid it out for what you really should be looking for, be doing as a paranormal researcher, taking photographs. And then, let's see, toward the end of the day, we had the Connor sisters. I don't know what I can say about them. They were, let me say, they were just, they were the life of the party. Let's just put it to you that way. They were the life of the party. Very boisterous and just a pair of Southern girls that really just enjoy what they're doing. And Misty and Ashley, they brought it. They brought their A game, and they really explained a lot about dealing with tarot cards and the kind of the misunderstanding about how all those things work and the reality behind them. And they did a little bit of a demonstration about it as well. So it was really entertaining, to say the least, and very informative as well. And they did a fantastic job covering their topic and keeping everyone entertained pretty much all weekend long. They did a heck of a job. Now, after that, we took a break for dinner, and we were invited back as speakers, invited back to the location to have the run of the house, essentially to investigate at will, do what we wanted and go wherever we wanted to. However, I was a little tired. I really hadn't slept the night before, and Nick really hadn't slept. Obviously, he was working. He only got a little bit of sleep in the car. It wasn't much. So we opted just to kind of skip that. We were just I was just too tired and just recovering from being sick. I thought it was probably a smart thing to do heading into the weekend. So well-rested coming into Saturday morning. And Scott Sukel was the first guy up. And Scott shared his personal history, which seemed like the theme of the weekend. Everyone was just really talking about where they came from, what they do, how they got there, and really what their role is in the paranormal. And he was the former, essentially former historian, head historian, and a tour manager for the Mansfield Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, and done it for a long time. The number of times that I've gone down there, he's been down there. Gosh, I don't even know how many times I've actually been there more than anywhere else. I love that building. I loved just connecting with it. And I feel comfortable when I walk in there, even though it's not the most comfortable place in the world to be, a former prison. It's full of very heavy emotion and very, I don't know, you can feel it. You can just feel it in your gut. You don't have to be psychic to feel this place. It's very active. It's mostly residual activity. It was very active in this place, but truly respect and I love it. I feel like I'm coming home every time I see that building, no matter how scary or spooky it looks. And if you've ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, that's the prison in that movie. So Scott shared his history and a little bit of experiences that he's had in Mansfield Reformatory. So that was entertaining. I've heard most of those stories, but it was still cool to hear them, you know, in front of everybody and the personal experience. Next up was Alan Marston. Alan has a background. He's a firefighter and a hazmat specialist. So he's a little bit of a kind of an emergency specialist. So he sees things a little bit different. And his presentation was titled Down the Rabbit Hole. And it was actually on the Mandela Effect. And it was really interesting because I wasn't sure what direction he would go with this. And it was really, really informative. And he essentially kept it pretty simple. He just defined what the Mandela Effect is. And then he started giving examples. And he asked people, you know, is this picture accurate? And it would give two examples and would say, is this accurate or is this accurate? Which one is this? And just over the years, we kind of twist the truth. We twist reality. And our minds remember things a little bit differently than what they actually happened. And it's really interesting to see live examples when he asked the crowd, you know, which is it? You know, and a lot of people will, most of us were wrong about a lot of these things. And it was really interesting to see how our memory works against us and how things really aren't really what we think a lot of the time. let's see. Then while I was up next, and I spoke on the basics of cryptozoology with a an Old Dominion slant, which is the Commonwealth of Virginia, Virginia, state of Virginia. Some of the cryptids that were there, like Chessie, Chesapeake Bay Monster, and a creature named Bunny Man, which is an interesting story. And just do your basic stuff like Bigfoot and whatnot, but just an interesting slant on cryptozoology, just the basic stuff. And hopefully it was pretty informative. It's always awkward to speak on a subject when the main area is something completely different, but I enjoyed it. And let everybody know that, hey, I'm a ghost investigator first, and all this other stuff is just icing on the cake, essentially. And let's see. After myself was Christopher St. Booth, who is a very talented producer of a number of television, or I guess not really, well, television and videos and a couple of books, a lot of information, and also trying to remember his big, well, a lot of Waverly Hills stuff. Let's just put it to you that way. A lot of Waverly Hills sanatorium things. Pretty much is right now is his big claim to fame. But it's really interesting to hear his take on there. For myself, being at Waverly Hills in the past and just hearing some of his stories and his how he put together some of his documentaries and how some of the stuff behind him went. Really interesting to hear all that stuff. And then after that, we broke for dinner. We came back and we did a public investigation. And it was kind of set up weird. I wasn't sure if I was going to like this at first. But the speakers were given specific areas. And we had the basement area, which actually I was asked what I wanted. And I wanted something unique. I wanted something. I didn't want to do the most popular room or whatever. Just something a little offbeat. So we chose the bowling alley and the boiler room. We also had, which is in the basement, we also had access to an electroshock room, but it ended up, to me, it was just too noisy on that floor, and it was too close to where the main meeting room area was to really utilize that room to any successful merit. So we spent our time down in the basement, pretty much on the bowling alley. We set up, I don't know, I guess our, not really a command center, but set up some recorders and just kind of sat there. So what happened then is the rest of the people that paid to go on this investigation, they were essentially just split up into groups, and they were allowed to essentially spend 50 minutes in each location. So it was like five or six locations. So the groups would spend almost an hour in one spot. We'd take a 10-minute break, and then we'd move to another location. And, you know, at first I wasn't sure if I was going to like being stuck in one spot, but it kind of grew on me, especially not being in one of these locations for a long time. I really wanted to get into one spot, get comfortable, be able to look for logical explanations to things that were going on. So I enjoyed it. It was really good. And, it was a good experience, especially being kind of, I don't want to say out of the field, but out of the, well, I guess out of the field, not out of the entire field, but out of doing field work, I guess, in haunted locations for a number of years. It was really interesting to take a peek, I guess, at how things are done now. And we'll talk a little bit later about that after we do some news. That's why I'm going to stir the pot a little bit. It was a little, some stuff I really wasn't digging, but, you know, I want to be careful with that, but, I'm just going to observe, and I'm just going to kind of give my feelings on that a little bit here. But, first, we'll get into some news. We'll talk some news. But I did want to mention before, cause I know I'm going to forget, I got it written down here in my notes. The Kecksburg UFO Festival. I haven't mentioned this yet. Things are just getting finalized and everything. The Kecksburg UFO Festival takes place Friday, July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Now, this is a little bit east of the Pittsburgh area, if you're trying to find it on the map. And it's kind of in a, I don't want to say remote, but it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere type of location. And Kecksburg is close to the location of where a strange UFO crashed back in December of 1965. And it's a very controversial crash. one of the top, I don't know, maybe top three or five crashes in the world. And here in the U.S., obviously, Roswell, you probably heard of that, is probably the top crash mystery. But Kecksburg is up there, and it's been controversial, especially in the last couple of years between Stan Gordon and John Venturi, two people who have kind of differing views and differing research and differing witnesses or people that have come forward with some information. So really interesting as to what's going on there. And not only will I be speaking there, but Stan Gordon, obviously, who is a longtime Bigfoot and UFO researcher in the area, has been doing it for over five decades. He's going to be speaking. But also Ron Murphy, who's the author of a number of books, and I've talked about a number of them here. And great author, great researcher, just awesome stuff. And I'm looking forward to what he's going to talk about. I'm hoping he'll talk about Chestnut Ridge stuff, which is really close to where we're going to be. And not only that, but the fourth speaker, I don't know if they're going to add anybody else, but the fourth speaker is fellow WCJV host Colin Schneider, who is one of the youngest UFO researchers and cryptozoologists in the country. And proud to be sharing the stage with him finally. Spoken at his school, been able to speak in front of him before, and seen him hanging out at a number of conventions over the years. Butler UFO Conference, I think it was at Kecksburg last year he showed up. Yeah, he was at Kecksburg last year. Of course he was. And a number of places I've seen him just pop it in. So it's going to be fun to hear him speak and to share the stage, to be able to have him up there as well. So it's going to be a good time at Kecksburg UFO Festival later on this summer, July 28th through the 30th. And if you've never been, if you've never heard, you didn't hear me talk about this last year. Oh my goodness. This is Kecksburg is something else. It's the only way I can put it. It's something else because it's like a fair. There's carnival food. Carnival rides. There's a burnout contest, which was one of my favorite things last year. Oh my goodness. They tie a car up to a concrete block and let the spin the tire. It's just phenomenal. You've got to see it. It's fun for everybody. Fun for the kids. Bring the kids out. They had a little tractor pull for kids last year. It's kind of weird, but interesting. Oh, they have a UFO hot dog eating competition. I didn't do it last year, but you know what? Maybe, just maybe, I'll do it this year. So it's like its own little – well, they have a parade too. I forgot about the parade. It was raining last year, so the parade was very quick. They were going like 30 miles an hour. But really interesting, and don't forget to bring your tinfoil hat because I saw plenty of those last year. It's a great time. It's a really, really – again, really interesting. It's a festival, so it's very unique as to what they do. Everybody's dressed up in alien stuff, and it's really weird, but it is a lot of fun. You don't see alien or UFO conventions like this usually. It's the MUFON type, and everyone's kind of dressed up, and they're taking notes, and it's more of a conference than a kind of a convention. But this is not either a convention or a conference. This is a festival. It's a lot of fun. And then, a week later, I'll be at Enigma Cons on August 5th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I did that event last year. It was fun. is interesting. A lot of just different speakers, not just paranormal, but just abnormal and weird stuff out there. So, yeah, we're at the bottom of the hour already. We haven't even talked about the news yet. So let's get into some news. But first, I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And, you know, I mentioned Colin Schneider, and in case you missed it, Monday nights is Crypto Kid Radio Show hosted by Colin Schneider. And don't miss it. He's got a lot of great guests. Always a good show. Very knowledgeable kid. Very awesome researcher. And, you know, he's not just going to bring somebody on the show. He's going to pick the best of the best. And always look forward to his show. Always can't catch it live. But if you can't catch it live, catch the archive. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, a very special paranormal experience with host Cad Hobson. I was excited to announce the very special guest, but I was told I wasn't allowed to. Well, I thought it was public knowledge, but I guess it's not. So tune in tomorrow night. You're not going to believe who it is. I can't say nothing. All right, so cryptid news. Let's jump into some cryptid news. And again, an update on the Chicago sighting. But first, I want to say that there's a – didn't really do a story. I think I talked about this the last time I was on 2 weeks ago about the thylacine hair story. And it's starting to finally get out there in the media that this has passed, that his funding effort to get the thylacine hair photograph and everything – has taken the next step. So it's moving forward, and really excited that I was a part of that, that I'm very proud of that. And hopefully that will come in handy someday, that the thylacine hair is being documented for the first time at this level. So cryptid news, and we're talking about Chicago. A pair of recent sightings of a large humanoid bat-like creature. Not Batman. It's been described kind of as a giant owl and also as Mothman, I guess, but I don't know. I think that the bat thing is pretty cool, so I stick with the bat thing. Well, now there are 7 sightings for 2017. There's been 2 additional sightings over the last couple of weeks. And a total of 10 since 2011. There was a number of sightings. Well, I guess 3 sightings. That's a number, right? 3 sightings back in 2011 of the same creature in pretty much the same area. So that's kind of weird that there would be that much of a layoff, or at least a layoff in people actually reporting it. But now it's getting a lot of attention in Chicago. The newspapers are talking about this. And I really wish that Carl Kolchek was real and he was around, because that's his stomping ground. Now, Calumet Park, near the Chicago Skyway, or essentially Interstate 90, is near the southern part of the city along Lake Michigan, near the Illinois and Indiana border. The park served as the 6th sighting in less than 2 months of a giant owl or bat-like creature that is human in appearance. Now, the witness and his 10-year-old son were at the park when they observed the large creature fly over them. The witness initially thought it was a goose, but then realized it had an 8 to 10 foot wingspan and was human in appearance and was probably about 6 feet tall if it were standing up. He estimated the creature was 15 to 20 feet above them and was traveling at around 40 to 50 miles per hour. The witness also said he observed the creature for about 30 to 35 seconds. Which I try to do some like quick math when I heard this story, and it's feasible in that area. The creature would have traveled almost a half a mile in that time frame, but it's feasible that they would have been able to see it. We had also heard a couple yell out when the creature flew over. So there could be another pair of witnesses to this specific event. Now, May 19th, there was another report as a woman, her friend, and another person witnessed not one, but two. Two of these large creatures flying over the water at the same time. And they were actually screeching at each other, which is the first time I think that's been mentioned. So that's interesting. The sighting occurred near the water in what was described as an area full of joggers and people. And this is the seventh sighting and the first time the two creatures have been described together. In a few of these incidents, there have been multiple witnesses, which casts a doubt as to whether this is just a hoax or just hysteria. And I'll tell you, this story is slowly shaping up to be one of the biggest paranormal stories of the year. It's just, again, multiple witnesses at these sightings is just unheard of to have that continuously. Now, these reports are flowing into MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, but Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, now he's done a fantastic job of keeping the story up to date, well, and keeping me informed along the way. He lets me know when he's publishing stuff, so I'm really on top of it when something breaks. And I really didn't expect this story to continue. I didn't expect, well, the sixth sighting, and then now the seventh sighting is just, it's just fantastic, just the way this is happening. So again, Lon Strickler at phantomsandmonsters.com. So you go to phantomsandmonsters.com. That's where you want to look if you're really interested in following this story. You know, I'll be honest. I thought it was an elaborate hoax. You know, like somebody was going to come out with a video that was just a hoax, even though, you know, and it planted these stories just as a buildup. But I'm telling you, it's just, it gets harder to doubt the story. The more sightings that pop up, the more witnesses with each story, it's just weird. And it's one of those things. It's not a logical creature. It's one of those out of this world type creatures that are being seen, a tall humanoid, winged humanoid type creature. It's just unheard of in nature. There's just nothing like it out there. But one interesting clue to come from this last sighting came to me. It was something that was in the back of my mind when it first broke. But I just kind of shied it off. But the fact that a witness said this really interests me. And it's at the end of the report, and she said, quote, "Are these things just giant bats, or are they gargoyles, or just people in those wingsuit thingies?" Unquote. So people in those wingsuit thingies might be an explanation, as most of the sightings this year are very close to bridges or tall buildings, which I kind of was thinking about and started to search and realized that, you know, is it a coincidence? There's tall buildings or bridges near these areas. But I mean, that would be a very dangerous kind of hoax to perpetuate, and it had to be well planned out in advance. It's not an easy thing to glide 20 feet over the ground in one of those wingsuits. You got to be going awful fast, much faster than 40 miles an hour. It's would not be possible. But again, it's the fact that a witness said this, kind of, I don't want to call it a red light, but it's an interesting take on a potential explanation of what's going on out there in the skies over Chicago. But again, we'll have to keep our eyes peeled on that. And there's there's an interesting map that Lon has put up that shows, and he's keeping it up to date from what I'm seeing here. Let me open it up. Let me throw it in the chat room here for you. And there he goes. So he clicked that link. It's a Google link to maps. And apologize for coughing. I'm just there it is. So Google Maps there. It's gives you a listing of the sightings and the locations, which is really interesting to be able to stand back and look at them at a glance and from afar and get a good glimpse of that. So we're going to jump to ghost news. And, well, there's no other way to put it. Paranormal television has unfortunately served as an inspiration for many teams over the years. And it's helped serve as the medium, pun intended, to introduce or at least popularize many of the tools and techniques over the years. Now, the television show Most Haunted, which is it's been a very controversial television show over the years. They've got caught faking a lot of stuff. A lot of former people that have been on the show have said that the show isn't legit. But anyway, it's been on a long time. Now, Most Haunting might be helping to add to expanding paranormal teams all over the world. During filming at the Abbey House Museum in Kirkstall, Leeds, West Yorkshire, England, that's a mouthful, there was a security guard with a German Shepherd. And the German Shepherd refused to go into one of the rooms that was purportedly haunted. Yeah, we've all heard of that, you know, dogs being sensitive. So Yvette Fielding, who is the host of the show, had her 2-year-old bulldog with her, and she said, quote, "Watson just walked into the room with no bother and plonked himself down and fell asleep," unquote. While she states she knows that Watson could tell when something is in the room, it doesn't seem to bother him. And, well, you know, it certainly won't bother the ratings for the show. It started back in 2002. And, well, again, it's been scrutinized yearly for faking evidence. But now, now they've got a dog. So that's going to be interesting to see. Now he's listed as one of the stars of the show, Watson. Keep an eye out for him. I don't know what to say about that. But we'll see if that's going to influence paranormal groups to start bringing dogs. I mean, people have known or have I've heard a number of stories of investigators with dogs. Now we'll see how this – I mean, obviously this show is UK-based, so we'll see how it does in the United Kingdom if it's really starts to influence people over there to bring their pooches out into the field. And Fielding says that it wasn't intentional. It just kind of something that just happened that during filming of the first episode of this season. But, you know, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy that. It's just awful coincidental. But we'll see. Will it become a fad? I don't know. Only time will tell. And obviously, if one of these U.S.-based paranormal shows does it, which is not out of the question, then, you know, we'll see. I mean, it'll probably become a little bit of a fad. I mean, anytime any of these shows show anything else like a tool or a technique, it gets picked up pretty quickly. So I'm willing to bet if a dog does show up on U.S. paranormal television, they're going to be adapted into the field pretty quickly here as well. Let's see. I'll go ahead and throw that. You guys can check out Watson the Bulldog in this article here in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you're getting kind of behind the scenes. You're getting the links to these stories before they show up on social media. And I do put those out during the week. And we'll put them out for you to digest, I guess. Okay. So anyway, other news tonight. I don't know. This is I almost debated not talking about this because of where it's going and what this could mean for the rest of the year here, the rest of the summer, because of what happened last year. And this is a return of one of the biggest stories of 2016. And ABC 15 out of Phoenix, Arizona, is reporting that a man chased after a bunch of children while threatening them with an axe in Glendale, Arizona. And you might know where I'm going with this. The most disturbing detail is what the man was wearing. Dominic, one of the boys that was chased, said, quote, "I thought I was going to die today. I turned around and all of a sudden I see a clown go by. And then he just starts running at me," unquote. That's right. The creepy clown sightings have begun once again. Hopefully this is just a one-time deal, because I certainly don't want to hear 60, 70 stories of creepy clown sightings again. So, yeah, police were able to find the axe and the mask. So, no suspect, but the axe and mask were found. And I was going to talk about stirring the pot and some of the observances that I had in the during the St. Albans Sanatorium ghost event. Some of the stuff I saw. You know, and I kind of debated about it because it's you know, I don't want to kind of attack anybody or make anybody feel that you know, I'm better than them, or what they're doing is worthless, or that I'm smarter than everybody. But it's just a couple of observations. And again, it comes from my observation as somebody who's been in the field since the mid-1990s. And, you know, we came from before digital cameras and before most of these fancy tools that are out there. Couldn't really afford EMF detectors. At the time, they were still pretty expensive. And I started with a shoebox recorder with cassette tapes, micro cassette recorders, 35 millimeter cameras. I mean, you took a picture, you had to wait. You had to wait days to find out what was on the film. You couldn't just, you know, look at a screen and see it. You had to wait. You had to take it somewhere. You had to get it developed. You had to pay for that. I mean, technology has gotten better since I started out. But, you know, with every advancement comes a kind of a counter with those advancements. And, you know, part of it is Photoshop and the ability to manipulate photographs. But also the instantaneous getting of a photograph, not just with orb shots, but just with shots that just don't look right, sometimes fool people. And I think the tools and technology have really clouded the direction of this field. And it's really taken it away from the human factor, from the connection, the people connection, the human, the living connection to the environment. And really, that's kind of what I saw there. One of my biggest pet peeves, is investigating in the dark. I never understood this, or I still don't understand it. Nobody can, no matter what anybody says, it just never makes sense to me. Turning off the lights to investigate in the dark using flashlights and LCD screens. Now, historically speaking, and actually cyclical research speaking, it's actually not that bad of a thing. There's actually a good reason for it. It actually helps your... It's actually conducive for creating psychokinetic activity. Hate to admit that, but a guy named Kenneth Batchelder, he did a number of table tipping sessions in the 1950s, and he was so he came up with a list of rules that if people follow, would be creating conducive environments for creating psychokinetic activity as a group. And dark conditions, near dark conditions, not black conditions, were necessary. So it's not completely off. But from a scientific standpoint, if you want to be scientific, it makes absolutely no sense to do that. There's no reason to turn lights off. There's no documentation or no findings that says that it helps induce any type of ghost activity whatsoever. it really just it hinders your best sense and it confuses you. And that's why people will see things in the dark or experience things that they don't regularly experience because you're messing with your senses. And I won't get too far into this. Only a couple of minutes left here, but really the lights, people have told me, well, it heightens my other senses. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. I hate to argue with you, but it doesn't. It actually doesn't. Your sight is tied into your hearing. So when you lose your sight, your hearing gets messed up. You know, I'm not talking about blind people using echolocation to find their way. That's a very special thing. But for the average person who's used to seeing all the time, losing your sight in the, you know, trying to navigate in the dark, it really messes you up. You don't hear things correctly. And that's why we click on flashlights when we hear things, because our mind tells us, I need more information to make a decision. And when we take that main sense away, we're setting ourselves up for these types of things. And there's really no really good reason to investigate in the dark other than to heighten that sense of excitement or wonder, or to, you know, to amplify that. And, you know, when you're in a setting like St. Albans and you're just having fun, there's really no, you know, there's no rule for it that you have to do one way or the other. But for me, I don't mind investigating in the dark, but I prefer to do it in normal conditions, as long as it doesn't affect anything. And one other observation is the tools. My goodness. You know, I thought tools were bad 5-10 years ago, but every single person had some sort of tool in their hand. And it was not normal stuff. You know, not EMF detectors and cameras and just your normal stuff. It was all these weird, some of the stuff I'd never even seen before. I'm going to be honest with you. Didn't recognize it. And a lot of people using their phones more often, which I don't think I like that. I mean, your phone is a phone. It's just a piece of electronic equipment that sends out EMF pulses consistently. It's tied into apps, and these apps are designed by people, especially if you're using Android. People like myself, people that really don't have a background in electronics or a background or knowledge in anything that's going to give you something that's going to be truly worthwhile to use in any kind of real serious research. And most of these apps, any of these ghost-based apps, they're for entertainment use. Again, there's no honest correlation between any of this stuff and truly documenting ghosts. People are coming up with things, essentially assumptions based on noises or based on words that they're hearing that they're tying into their specific environment at the time. And it's basically just assumption based. And it's primarily with these, what's it called? The SBX-12, those spirit box things. And some of the apps too. Some of the apps I was reading about. Some of these apps on phones, and they're actually just, they sound like radio sweepers, but they're actually random word generators. So it's specific words that are already chosen and put into this thing. So the context of these words are a little bit geared toward the ghost field, a little bit geared toward inquiry into people, into places, into things. So you have to take it with a ginormous grain of salt when you're doing anything with these things. And, you know, I'm still seeing K2s, EMF detectors. In this building, again, people with cell phones, it's going to register on a K2. Walkie-talkies register on a K2. And all these electronic equipment, it's going to register. So any EMF detector, you should be using it for its intended purpose, to find sources of man-made electronic devices, and this will help you rule out false positives in any location, which is, should be your goal, or to find the source of any EMF pulse. And one other thing that it was a little concerning is this flashlight thing. I can't believe that people are still using this flashlight experiment thing where you take whatever it's called. You unscrew it a little bit and the light goes out and it goes off and on. Now, I was listening to some of my audio yesterday and I was a little bored, so I pulled out my mag light, my mini mag light, that's what they are, and I set it up for that. And my flashlight was going off and on every couple of minutes, but I don't think it was a ghost. Now, there is a video for that you can watch if you have the time. It's a little lengthy, and I'll be posting that during the week, and you can watch that. And it explains the science behind what's going on with your flashlight. If you're using a mini mag light, you are slowly destroying your flashlight. And I've done this for years on my mini mag light. And I'm certain that it's going to stop working pretty soon completely because it's not the smartest thing to do. But it's basically just a trick. And it's essentially just using electronics. Ghosts aren't getting involved. They're not crawling into your flashlight. But enough with that. Probably and again, this is just an observation. I'm not trying to attack people, tell people they're doing it wrong. Because these weren't serious experiments. These weren't like people saying that they were definitely connecting with ghosts. It was just an attempt to connect. But one thing that really kind of surprised me, I guess, is that people, I don't know if it's the people that are less patient or the fact that they have the tools are making them less patient. But people will set up in a room, they'll turn on their SBX or their turn on their phone or turn on their ghost apps or turn on whatever equipment they have or do any kind of I saw dowsing rods or people talking about pendulums. A lot of divination tools, techniques, which is weird because divining rods, in case you don't know, they actually work by unconscious muscular action. It's not magic. A number of studies have been used by skeptics and just random scientists as well as people in the divination field. And when you weigh all these studies, it really shows that the divining rods are just a chance to find things. It's not magic at all. And really, if you're talking about underground water sources, there's actually a higher success rate at that than there is detecting entities or getting information through divination techniques. And it works, again, through unconscious muscular action, which is also called the ideomotor effect, which is the same thing that powers the Ouija board. But imagine that. But anyway, that being said, the use of tools, it was just weird when they set up and they got the tool going. It was almost like they demanded an answer or a connection right away. And it was almost that any blip or any blink or anything was automatically just assumed to be a ghost. And I was blown away by that because I remember spending a lot of time setting up or asking a question, waiting for a response, or just getting into the environment, getting ready. And I don't know. It was just weird to see how quick the expectation was that there was something to do, and how quickly some of these sessions were. Some of these sessions were only 3 to 5 minutes long before they stopped. And, you know, they were getting what they felt were answers. And I don't think they were. But for me, I don't know if it's the confidence in the tool. But again, I mentioned Nick Smith, a fellow investigator who I've known for a long time, the co-director of our group, Ohio Anomalous Research. And he said that he thought it was because of the instantaneous results essentially gathered on television. And it makes good sense. It makes perfect sense, actually. That, you know, you watch one of these shows, it's a half hour, it's an hour, and these sessions are condensed down from what could possibly be 45 minutes, an hour and a half, down to 2 minutes. So, you know, maybe, again, people are getting a lot of their stuff from television. They're getting it from other groups. And it's that culture, unfortunately. And so I can't really blame the people that are doing it. They're doing it because other people are doing it. They see, well, maybe this is how it's done. And, you know, I've always said, I just think that people just don't know that there are other ways to do things, that you don't have to do experiments with this technology. And just because other people are doing it and supposedly getting results doesn't mean that's what they're getting. But again, it can't hurt as long as you're not financially straining yourself to buy these tools to try new techniques, to try different things and to see whether or not they work over time. But again, you have to understand how they work. I think that's the bottom line here. It's not what you do, but it's how you do it and how your assumptions work about what's going on or your beliefs behind what these tools can actually give to you. Again, it's TV's fault, but it's also, you know, investigators like myself. I've done what I can to pass down my knowledge to new groups out there. And, you know, just wonder, have I done enough? And, you know, a lot of this, it's just coincidence. It's bias. Or in the case of, you know, these radio sweepers and stuff, it's pareidolia. It's just an audio version of pareidolia. That's really, I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse with that, but that's just kind of some observations. And again, not trying to belittle anybody or say that people are doing stuff wrong or I'm better. Just merely observations of somebody who's, you know, I've tried a number of techniques. I work with a lot of different people over the years. I've worked with parapsychologists. I've worked with, a lot of people in the field from scientific backgrounds, in medical backgrounds and engineering backgrounds in the field. So I've seen different ways of doing things. I've seen different ways of utilizing these tools correctly and incorrectly. So it's just an observation, not an accusation. And with that, I think that's it because there it is. Look at that. There's Batman. Yeah. Well, again, I apologize tonight for if you heard any hacking or coughing or anything like that, still getting over this flu or pneumonia or whatever I have. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, hopefully I'll continue to get better and we can bring you even more news coming forward. Hopefully it's this is going to go and I won't have any more of that. So that being said, big thanks to everybody tuning into the chat room. Cindy, producer, who's going to have her hands full again tonight, filtering some stuff out. But anyway, appreciate everything that she does and everything that everybody in the chat room does for showing up and hanging out. From Dita and Paul and the great Jim Mallard for showing up, supporting me. I appreciate that. That's it. So I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always, always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting. We'll be right back.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.